listening to This Week in Virtualization, TechTarget's weekly news podcast on server and desktop virtualization.
Welcome to the June 22nd edition of This Week in Virtualization. I'm Associate Editor Keith Kessinger.
And I am Senior Site Editor Bridget Botello.
VMware made a couple of updates to vCenter Orchestrator this week, its workflow automation tool. New plugins can now integrate vSphere and vCloud Director automated processes into third-party tools that use HTTP, REST, and SOAP. Before, users had to manipulate SMTP, SSH, and other protocols to integrate Orchestrator with other systems. Or they had to wait until VMware and its partners released API integrations for their desired tools or systems. With this new plugin, Orchestrator can now make direct calls to other system APIs, making life easier for admins. There's also another Orchestrator plugin for vCenter Update Manager. It allows administrators to scan and remediate host VMs and applications against established baselines. It also facilitates the patching and upgrading of hosts, and it even supports updates for virtual hardware and VMware tools in virtual machines. Here with me to talk about the changes to vCenter Orchestrator is Brian Knutson, Systems Engineer at Vital Support Systems. Thanks for joining us, Brian.
Thanks for having me.
So what do you think of the new changes to Orchestrator?
Well, Orchestrator is one of those products that, you know, the more news that gets put out there for it, the better. It's one of those golden gems that most people don't know about, and to see VMware to continue innovating on it, creating new pieces of it, and getting the word out there is really, really exciting for me personally, because I've taken a particular interest in it, and I've done not a lot with it, but I find it a critical piece of an infrastructure that a lot of people don't even utilize.
So in what case can you give us an example of some of the use cases that this would be a useful tool?
With Orchestrator, you could tie in with a plugin for UCS Manager that's already been released. Tied in along with these HTTP REST and SOAP protocols, you can use it to tie into a monitoring software that can realize that, you know, there's a certain level of performance that we hit, and all of a sudden now we need another host in the cluster. Using the plugin, the Cisco UCS Manager, you can automatically provision a new server into the cluster, install ESX on it, and then use the built-in workflows within Orchestrator to add that to the cluster resources and start provisioning VMs onto that new piece of hardware. All with, you know, completely automated potentially without having to even touch any of the software with an administrator.
Hmm. Now, in a blog post, VMware stated something along the lines of, "So you've asked for these changes and we've delivered. So can you tell us, like, who were the people, like, asking for this plugin? Like, what were the businesses that, what are the kind of businesses that need this plugin?"
Obviously, third party ISVs would have an interest in having these because they don't need to necessarily build direct plugins within Orchestrator. Because now, if I as an ISV offer an HTTP REST or a SOAP interface into my software, someone using Orchestrator could tie in directly into my software without me having to write this interface. It's also useful with other VMware products that may not have plugins already or workflows built into Orchestrator already, since they're all based on the SOAP protocol or an HTTP REST protocol as well.
So with the recent updates to Orchestrator and Converter, do you see that these are normal lifecycle updates, or do you think that these updates are gearing up for something bigger?
Well, the vCenter Converter is obviously a update long in coming. The last previous major upgrade to Converter was back with the vSphere launch. So there's a lot of features that other third-party vendors have taken the lead on, stuff like optimizing the partitioning information, and features like that are becoming more and more critical, Converter hasn't added until just recently. So I see that as a much-needed update that was long in coming. As far as the Orchestrator plugins go, I see this as an evolutionary growth of this product. As automation becomes more and more critical, which is, you know, one of the tenets of cloud computing in the first place, having Orchestrator tie into more and more systems is going to be critical to its success, both for Orchestrator as a product and VMware as a solution center.
So, Brian, do you see any reasons that a company might use a third-party P2V tool instead of using the vCenter converter with the new features in the version 5 beta? Are there things that are still missing in it?
One powerful feature I see a lot of customers asking about or looking for is the ability to tie in a P2V process as part of a DR solution.
Mm-hmm.
So to be able to constantly P2V, you know, that exchange server that you just can't bring yourself to virtualize for some reason, and have it P2V'd across over to your DR system so that should a DR event occur, you flip on, you know, you essentially end that P2V process, flip it on as a virtual machine, and get your exchange server up and running a heck of a lot easier than you could onto a physical system at the DR site.
Yeah, that's something that the backup DR software companies offer today, right?
Yep. You see that in the Veeams and the Quest of the world today.
Yeah. So is there anything else that you see that could VMware could stand to add in either of the orchestrator or the converter at this point?
Well, just like Cisco has a plug-in to UCS Manager, I could definitely see advantages to the whole VCE suite. Mm-hmm. Or the matrix system that HP has. You know, anything that is built for virtualization, having this orchestration level is going to be critical. At the same time, HP does compete with VMware on the orchestration layer as well, so I don't know how likely that is to happen, but, you know, any third party that ties in with VMware at any level really could find advantages of being a part of the orchestrator suite, I would think.
Yeah. Well, cool. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us, Brian. We appreciate you having you.
My pleasure. Thanks for asking.
Hi, this is Senior Site Editor Colin Steele. I wasn't able to join Bridget and Keith as they talked to Brian about some of the new stuff in vCenter, but I'm here now to talk about Microsoft Hyper-V, the next version we've learned some more details about in the past week. And on the phone now to talk about those details is Rob Mikshinsky, who is a Hyper-V expert and member of our Server Virtualization Advisory Board. Thanks for joining us, Rob.
Thanks for having me, Colin.
So we've known for, you know, almost a year or so that there were rumors that the next version of Hyper-V would be included with the Windows client OS and not just with Windows Server as it has been since it debuted a couple of years ago. And it looks like that's going to be the case. Microsoft Hyper-V blogger by the name of Robert McLaws found the latest Windows 8 build, a leaked build, and it pretty clearly shows that Hyper-V is a feature that you can just turn on or off in the Windows 8 OS. So what are the ramifications of having Hyper-V part of the client and having it act as kind of a client hypervisor now, in addition to being a server virtualization hypervisor?
Yeah, I think they've brought it past some of the stages of what you'd normally use virtual PC in the past with for test environments. That'll probably always be there. But also gives you features as far as some of the, what we in the past was a kind of XP mode. Gives you, you know, increased features of those sets, potentially running multiple VMs under the covers to again look at some of those down level clients, and give some of those some full resources. Now the number of CPUs, the ability to connect to other resources outside of there, and to be able to tweak certain resources really gives that a decent enhancement.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but with XP mode or App V, you still kind of had to rely on a server virtualization backend at some point to support those features. Is that right?
That is correct.
And now the theory is you won't have to.
Well, that could be definitely with the architecture they're building underneath. That really increases the power, increases the flexibility of the local using local resources.
And when you're doing this kind of desktop or I guess application virtualization, one of the things that kind of holds those back a lot of times is the need for the back end. Do you think that this will help boost adoption of application virtualization?
I think it can. It definitely will give, especially potentially laptop users, ability to use this stuff offline more often, and kind of integrate with the VDI strategy they have as well.
Yeah, that's a good point. The offline access, if it's all contained within the desktop operating system, you don't have to worry about, or you might not necessarily have to worry about streaming things from the data center into your client environment.
That's correct. Yes, and some of the syncing capabilities that that are there, whether you can sync up with your server VM that may be there on site when you're in the office.
Especially as we're moving into Windows 7 migrations now, and we're already hearing more and more about Windows 8 with its touchscreen interface and a lot of really big changes to how Windows looks. It's going to be important for these systems to support legacy applications that enterprises use. I would imagine that that's a big part of why this is being built in, so that those applications can just be virtualized and run in a self-contained environment.
Yeah, I think you're correct. This is kind of extension of what they've tried to do with moving from XP to Vista to 7 is try to have that capability. And then moving forward, they're trying to they still want to move forward with their plans for the operating system on the desktop, and also allow for organizations to make those changes if they can early, but not lose the chance to still service some of their applications that are lagging behind in compatibility with the new version. So it gets them their forward motion that they want, as well as power and performance for the legacy stuff that they need to support long term.
And even though this was the client operating system version of the next Hyper-V release, it looks like it's giving us some insight into other Hyper-V features that might not just be specific to the client, but might also apply to server virtualization. The biggest one there was the VHDX file format, which is apparently Microsoft's new virtual file format replacing VHD. What kind of struck you about that?
Yeah, as far as a client, there's probably very few clients that would really need a 16 terabyte option going down the road. But it gives compatibility right now with Windows 8, and I'm hoping that'll they'll drop that back down to potentially on the server side on server 2008 R2. But that's to be seen. Other features like the virtual fiber that is out there is not common for desktop operating systems, but very common in server operating systems. Having that option to connect out to a into your fiber network from a VM gives you more flexibility. There's been more and more talk of clusters inside of clusters, a clustered VM you could potentially do, and to give even higher availability of your workloads.
And going along with the idea of clusters, there is also support for storage resource pools.
Correct. That's another one of those flexibility features that they've kind of built on this. So some of these enhancements they've made, some are new features, some of them are enhancements to other features. The storage pools is an enhancement. The NUMA options for memory tweaking is also another enhancement to the features that's kind of out there. The network features, the hardware accelerations, the bandwidth managements are all kind of extensions of the base networking functions they have now. I think it's kind of split between the more granular control of some of these pieces and more options, and as far as and enhancements to already existing features that are out there. So I think it's a good sign so far.
Going back to VHDX, you mentioned the 16 terabytes. That's in reference to the size of the disks that it will support. There's also going to be support for larger VMs and denser hosts in the next version of Hyper-V, according to this leak. That's kind of a trend we're seeing in both vSphere 5 and Zen Server 6, with the ability to support these huge VMs and put a lot more of these VMs on a host. What does that mean for server virtualization and server consolidation, and other potential advantages of these feature enhancements?
Yeah, I think it points to early on in the Hyper-V days and early on in virtualization days in general, that the biggest push was get as many VMs as you could on one host. I think we're still seeing some of that and some of those options, but I think the marketing is changing a little bit to saying, well, you can really ease your management. You can now have 16. We can accept 16 terabyte basically VHDs. Off the 12 cores of on a VM for CPUs, much more memory. So you're getting to the point where you can use virtualization to put less VMs on a host, or even one VM on a host. Just use that as an abstraction layer for your hardware. now that the performance is up and those are there, that's becoming a reality that we're seeing in a shift in the original VM to host ratio type of scenarios.
Rob Akshitsky, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for tuning in to This Week in Virtualization, and we will talk to you next week.
You've been listening to This Week in Virtualization. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. And for more information, visit searchservervirtualization.com, searchvmware.com, and searchvirtualdesktop.com.